Welcome to the Delta Flyers journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts along this journey are Terry Farrell, your favorite science officer, Garrett Wong, our forever ensign, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil. Welcome, Terry. Welcome back to our podcast. I'm our so happy podcast. You're with us.
Yes.
This is so exciting.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, so my goodness.
We're off and running after last week's incredible marathon of a pilot. I feel like Garrett and I were really anxious and nervous about talking about your show because we're not as familiar with it. I'm not as familiar. So I want to do it right. I want to be perfect. I want to make you proud.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. You already make me proud. Please. For me, it's a new experience too, because it's been so many years.
Yeah.
And I watched a few episodes back to back, and then I had to rewatch what we were doing today this morning, because it gets so overwhelming to have all of these. I think one of the things that the writers did really, really well was really flesh out the characters. So there's things I know
that are coming.
I forget that I'm not supposed to know yet.
Yeah. I think that's why this one intimidates me more than our show. Aside from the fact that Garrett and I were on it, Voyager. What intimidates me about this is your show is really, things are tied together. Stories and character and journeys are tied together. We just had to watch, the story of the week. Nothing was tied together on our show. So it sort of made it simpler. This one is a little more intimidating, but it's exciting. Okay, so we are doing birthdays now on this podcast for our Patreon subscribers. And we've got a few birthdays to read out. Mike Philman on December 11th. Happy birthday.
Four from mine. Happy birthday.
Yeah. We also have Carol Patterson, December 13th. Happy birthday, Carol.
Happy birthday.
Estelle Keller, thanks for being one of our Patreon subscribers. Happy birthday on December 13th to Estelle. We also have Justin Weir on December 14th. Happy birthday to Justin and all of our Delta Flyer Patreon subscribers. Thank you.
And that is the birthday of Megan. The 14th. So we have Megan is December 14th. So that's our last Patreon birthday wish was the 14th. So no one on my birthday, correct? No one on the 15th.
No, just so far. We'll see next week.
No, Robbie, it's crazy. In all my life, I've met two people with that birthday, my birthday.
Really?
It's so rare to find someone with the 15th.
Your December everywhere. Birthday?
December 15th.
Baby. Yeah.
My niece Brittany's birthday is on December 21st.
All right.
And my favorite guy in the whole world, Max Baker, my son, is on December 24th.
Oh, wow. Aww. Christmas Eve, baby.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We had a choice of the day before or the day after Christmas because he just didn't want to leave.
You
want to stay in that comfortable womb.
Who does? Right? Who wants to leave?
Yes. But 11, oh my gosh, 10 pounds, 12 ounces. It had to go.
Wow. Yeah. Excuse me?
It was me or him.
Did you say?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You just said 10 pounds, 12 ounces?
That's a toddler.
Robbie, how much did you weigh when you popped out?
A toddler.
I was 6 pounds something. There's no way you were 10 pounds,
were you,
Robbie.
I'm going to say.
I think I was about 5 something. I was smallish, I think. Yeah.
Oh, well, you got over it.
Oh, did I? Okay. I also want to welcome our new prophets. Thank you for signing up. David Buck is a prophet on Patreon, and Izzy Jaffer is a prophet. Welcome to our new prophets.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ever.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. So we have all watched this episode, past prologue. I'm so excited to talk about it. We traditionally have our poetry synopsis. So I'll start with my limerick.
Do it.
Here we go with my limerick for past prologue. Kira's old friend shows up at the station. He's looking for political salvation. Garrick asks Julian to come by. Is he a tailor or a spy? Blowing up the wormhole was Tana's real motivation.
Oh, I like it. It's good.
I wanted to do good. Terry, tell me, were you happy?
You did so good. I'm so happy.
Here's my haiku for past prologue. Los wants asylum. Tough decisions for Kira. Bashir bought a suit.
I'm glad
you got a suit. I tried to get suited.
I know you wanted to get suit in there. I was like, he didn't get suit in there. What?
Well, that was a great haiku, Garrett. I really loved it. I'm jealous that you got the word suit.
And you tried to get suit, but it didn't fit. Quite all right.
So, past prologue, mm-hmm. written by Catherine Powers, directed by our good friend Rick Colby, who directed the pilot.
Good old Rick.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. A great guest cast, Jeff Nordling, Andy Robinson, Gwyneth Walsh, Barbara March, Susan Bay, and Vaughn Armstrong.
Good old Vaughn. I know. She's in everything.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
This episode, Past Prologue, aired on January 11th, 1993. Mm. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while since this one came out.
Yep.
Been a hot minute.
Yes, it has. Well, let's dive into it. So we start off, we're in the Replimat.
What the hell's a Replimat, first of all?
It's like an automat, right? Isn't that where they got the name?
Yeah, like think Jetsons.
Oh, okay. It's to go and I think they actually use that word. Right? Food and drink. It's like a little cafe.
Well, like an old automat was the machines like in the 50s. You go put your quarter in and
it's like a vending machine. It's a vending machine. Thank you.
But it's replicated.
But it's a replicator machine. I get it. Okay. Now I know.
So you say, I want a tuna sandwich. It replicates a tuna sandwich. I wonder if it has the same nutritional value. That would be my question.
We have discussed that.
Let's not go. No, don't go there. Okay. You're going to go there? You're going to go there now. God dang it.
We've discussed the replicators. Where do they get their organic materials from? The base of it. It's got to come from the poops. I'm just saying, we have to recycle poops.
He's saying everything.
Okay. On with the show.
I told you, Robbie. I told you don't go there.
Okay. All right. Anyway, Bashir's eating in the Replimat by himself. Garrick approaches. He introduces himself. Garrick is super friendly in this scene. Bashir thinks he's a spy, though, so he's terrified. Mm. And, Garrick introduces himself, says, come by. I love in this scene, so many things. First of all, Bashir, I never realized Sid was so funny. Whenever I met him, he seemed so sophisticated and refined to me. I didn't realize he's such a comic relief.
Mm.
His first line,
both.
He stutters. He's both. He's so good.
But then physical comedy too, right? With that little piece of leaf in his face, right? He's just, oh God.
He's adorable.
Yeah. The Replimat, I have a question, Terry, about this. Mm. When you had like a full house, like when that place was full, because you in the Replimat, you saw down the corridor and everything, right? So you had to have your set had to be filled with extras, background performers, a lot, right?
Almost all the time. I mean, Wow. Yeah. I mean, even when you pay attention to ops, there's extras crossing in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were really good about having that so that we felt like we were really in a, in an experience where people are living there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my first impression in this scene. I immediately went, oh, this is really different than our show because we had some regular crew, but we were lost in the Delta Quadrant with a limited crew. So we never had big, unless we were in the mess hall maybe, but we never had big extra scenes like you guys. That must have been a big undertaking. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was like that specific section of the promenade felt like being at a mall.
Yeah.
It just did.
What stage was that on, that part of the promenade?
Was it four? No, four was where ops was.
Okay, seven?
And whatever the turn set was. What do they call that? I forgot.
The swing set. Yeah.
Swing set, thank you. And then right next to us, did he say it was seven? I don't remember because I lived in front of four. So four was sort of my...
That was your go-to orientation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in the Replimat, Bashir is very, very nervous. Garrick is super, super friendly. He says, I've got a clothing shop. If you need any clothes, any apparel, please come visit. I'm at your disposal. Mm. Bashir calls him Mr. Garrick, and Garrick corrects him. He goes, no. Garrick, plain, simple Garrick, mm-hmm. which reminded me of my very first, one of my first lines on Voyager, where I said, tomato soup, plain. Hot tomato soup. Yeah. It was the same sort of cadence.
Yeah. I just related to. Yeah, there's some parallels here between our show and DS9 for sure.
I also love at the end of the scene where they speak in unison, Bashir, and when Garrick says, oh, it's just Garrick, plain, simple Garrick. When he says Garrick, Bashir simultaneously in unison says it, Garrick, with his stutter. It's very funny. God, I love Bashir.
You're team Bashir already.
I am.
I am team
Bashir.
Yeah.
I got to say.
Goodness gracious.
That won't change.
No, I don't think it will.
When you see him, what do you say to him now? Because you know how he went from Sidig at Alpha Deal.
It's a nickname.
You say Diggs.
He calls me Tel. That's short for Terry.
Love it.
And I call him Diggs. Diggs. Short for Sidig.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of Sid. Right. Diggs. So we both had nicknames for each other.
That's adorable.
That's so cool.
Yeah, but I think of him as Sidig El-Fadel. I don't think of him as Alexander Sidig. That feels like, who's that?
Yeah,
I don't know who that is.
Who's that human being? Okay.
But most people called him Sid, right?
Yeah.
My favorite character so far, Bashir. Exits the lift onto Ops, the floor of Ops. Mm-hmm. He is telling everyone how excited he is that Garrick the spy wants to get to know him and maybe he can, you know, see some spy action. He asked for like a monitor so he can spy on Garrick and give them information.
Yeah.
And basically everybody in Ops thinks it's adorable, but they don't take it too seriously. And then there's an alert that sounds and a Cardassian ship is spotted chasing this Bajoran ship, firing at it. And they've crossed into the wrong territory.
They're in Bajoran space.
Yeah. They're in Bajoran space. Mm-hmm. And the Bajoran aboard, we will learn his name is Tana Los later on, but he requests an emergency beam out and he beams right there into Ops, which I have to say again, I love that you have a transporter pad on your bridge. It's incredible. It's incredible. But he sees Kira and they know each other and he asks for asylum. And that's our teaser. That's how we end the teaser. So Kira sees an old friend. Who's being chased by Cardassians? What's going on? We will see.
I like the beam in, how he's in that huddled position. A lot of times we don't do that on Voyager. We just beam in standing up, but he was like, when he beamed in. So I enjoyed
it. Well, he had to be, right? Because his ship was
about to explode.
Yeah. Right. But we've beamed people from ships on Voyager that are about to explode and they still beam in standing up. They don't beam in sitting down. They don't. Well, I don't know why. Weird.
I think that would be, correct me if I'm wrong, Robbie, but I would think that would be the director making sure that you look like you're coming from whatever the stressful situation you came from. If you look like you forgot it, which to me, if he were standing, it would look like, did you not remember that you were just coming from a ship that's about to explode? You should you should be huddled because that's exactly the position you would have been in.
I love when there's a beam in and as the beam in finishes, the person falls or, you know, as if they got
like
beamed
they pass out.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they're being held through space and time molecularly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
I think that's
you like
cool.
that word, huh?
I do.
Molecularly.
You didn't know I could say it.
Molecularly. Five syllable word. You get bonus points for that.
I'm almost doing a haiku. Shut up.
Okay. So we see Kira's new haircut in in this scene.
Love.
Better.
Bam.
Better.
There's Kira. Like, hello. Now she's here.
Yeah. Yes.
She's not like her hair going to the prom. Oh, she must have been so happy.
When we first see her, it's ridiculous. Then later in the pilot, it does change. It does change a little bit.
The style changed, but it was still a wig.
It was still the haircut. No, it's her hair.
Oh, that was her hair?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a wig. I assume it's a wig because everybody on our show wore wigs.
Yeah, that's
because Roxanne wore wigs. Yeah. Kate wore a wig. Everybody wore wigs.
I had a wig. I had a three-quarter fall.
Did you?
You did. I was going to ask you. So you had a bit of a addition.
Did you go through multiple hair tests? Did you go through different styles? Like, was there until they finally came upon the final one with a single ponytail? Yeah. They put a bun in the beginning on you trying that out? Like, or was it just straight to the ponytail?
I don't remember all the styles. I don't, because I think that was probably one of the easiest things to solve.
Yeah. Mm. For you guys. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, for me, they went through so much drama with my makeup.
Mm.
I think once they settled on that look, then it was more a matter of how high should my
hair go.
You know, that
it looked a little high in this episode, higher than I remember. Yeah. Just that I,
it'll kind of,
there's a zhuzh there. Yeah. You got some height.
Like my spots sometimes are like, whoa. And other times it's just like right on the edge. I like it when it's a little, it looks
so there's a little ebb and flow of your spots at times.
Yeah. Because they're hand painted.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Armin stole my thunder there. He wasn't realizing it. It was like, no, let me talk about my makeup. I'm going to talk about your makeup.
Armin.
I know. I still love Armin. Like, Armin.
Who doesn't love Armin?
Are you trying to
I didn't get the hearts that time.
You got to hold it longer. You got to hold it longer. 3, 2, 1.
See, I try, even though I hold it long, it doesn't do it. Look at that. Robbie, I'm heartless.
I know. You are heartless.
Do you need an upgrade? Is that what's happening?
I don't know.
Are you not an Apple guy?
I have Apple. What are you talking about?
You're a bad Apple.
Okay.
I have to say something here. When this guest actor beamed in, I looked at him and I was like, God, he looks so familiar. And it wasn't until halfway through this episode that I realized it was Jeff Nordling, who I know, who I've worked with a bunch, who Jeff Nordling, who plays Tana, actually, the very first thing I ever wrote, a short play, Jeff did this staged reading of that play that I wrote out in West LA at a little theater.
Wow.
I've known Jeff for a long, long time.
Huh.
But I didn't even recognize him because he was so young.
He had a little
makeup on, but I was like, I know that guy. I know that guy. It wasn't until 3 or 4 scenes in that I was like, it's Jeff Nordling.
Yeah.
Next, we go to Ops. After our opening credits, medics are wheeling Tana, Jeff Nordling, away. And the Cardassian commander, Gul Dinar, Vaughn Armstrong, hails them. They basically want Tana turned back over. He's a criminal. Sisko tells Gul Dinar that he's asked for asylum, but that Gul Dinar can dock and come aboard to discuss. And after he ends the call, I love when Sisko goes over to O'Brien and says, make up some docking regulations to stall. Like, don't let him come on board too quickly. We need to go. Me and Kira are going to go see Tana. So I love that. And I thought that was great. I love the fact that he was talking about delay people docking. Is that something that you guys could do? Was that like a runner that, like, because it's a docking station. So we didn't have that same kind of setup. But is that something when you were dealing with bad guys, like, don't let them dock or things like that? Was that a common thing?
Yeah, I think so. Because also, you think of our TSA. This is pre-TSA heavy-duty security, right? Hmm. But for Deep Space Nine, obviously Voyager 2, we're so far in the future that would be a normal.
Yeah.
It's like a little country, a teeny-weeny little country, and people are coming in and out of it. I want to say about the docking, when creatures, aliens, humanoids, what do we call beings, come on the station with guns and whatnot, I question how they even get past that and get them onto the promenade.
Yeah.
Mm. How is that possible?
Yeah.
So that's a question.
That's going to come up later. Absolutely. Yeah. With the Klingons. And I had also had
notes because you said that, I thought it was important to say. Yeah. Because that's interesting, but that would make sense. I mean, you could pull somebody aside when you go through customs, right? Mm-hmm. And go to the customs official, and then they make you go through all your stuff.
I've done that before. So, yeah. I've gotten stuck especially going back and forth to Canada so much, I've gotten stuck sometimes where I got to go
secondary inspection.
Wait,
Nobody wants. I got stuck once because I had I have a tan color, but it used to be this rice powder from Japan and it was white, right?
Yeah.
And you'd use it just to like get the little greasy spots when you model.
Take the shine away.
Way back, I was probably like, I don't know, early 20s, 21, 22.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was coming home from England. A boyfriend of mine was doing a movie over there. And we were coming back through customs after 6 months. They thought it was cocaine. And oh my God, I was just like, it's not. But like, I don't know why. Even when you know you're right, how that can be such a terrifying situation.
Yeah.
Like, please don't take me into a room all by myself.
Yes.
And my boyfriend turned to me and he goes, if you start crying right now, I'm going to slap you.
What?
And I was like, and it was like he slapped me just by saying that. And I was like, okay, right. Don't get caught up in, you're not in trouble. Yeah. You didn't do anything wrong.
You've got makeup.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was like it was actually really smart of him to, you know, get me back into the real moment. But
right. Because if you get emotional,
it's really scary.
You're incriminating yourself in a way. If you get emotional,
I didn't
right?
do anything. So. I know, but it did what I thought, oh, no wonder they think that it kind of does look exactly like that.
Sure.
But basically it's chalk.
It's funny that you bring up pre-TSA or pre-9/11, that DS9 was all made before 9/11 happened. And yes. Back in those days, planes, you know, going to airports was easy. I mean, there was a metal detector and that was about it. Like they didn't
customs
check much
was
of
the biggest thing that we went through.
Yeah.
If you went out of the country, that's why I compared it to going to another country because that was the only time that happened.
Well, Cisco basically said, pull a full TSA on this guy.
Yes.
And don't let him come on board.
Yes.
So yes, full. Yeah. Secondary inspection.
Detain
Cisco.
Him.
Yeah. Cisco is delaying him. Mm-hmm. And then Kira and Cisco get on the turbo lift. They start to ride. They have a very tense conversation about terrorists, Bajoran terrorists, Kon Ma, which is the first time. Yeah, Kon Ma. First time I've heard about them. Yeah. Those are the bad guys.
Can I just stop for one quick second? That turbo lift, the one in Ops, you know how it resembles we had a similar elevator in engineering where it would go from one level to another, but the one that you guys have in DS9, it's open when it gets up into Ops. When it drops below, it becomes a regular turbo lift. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't. Does that make sense, Robbie? It's open to the.
I can't
no
remember.
Barriers.
Yeah, it's
when
like
it's on Ops.
Yeah, it's almost like a cargo elevator up top. You know, like no doors or walls. It does.
It shuts and then you go down. Yeah. Doesn't it?
I never
saw it. Or you see us going down.
You see you going down.
There is nothing down there.
Yes, we know that.
I mean, you go down to nothing. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's typically, we had two types of turbo. We had the turbo lift where the doors open, you go in, it closes, and it goes to another deck. Solid doors.
Right.
But then in our engineering, we had an open sort of like lift that had a railing that looks exactly like yours, similar to yours in Ops. And it would just go from level one to two, two to one in engineering. It didn't go anywhere else. But I thought from what I was watching, Robbie, that the one in Ops turns into a regular over.
I think it's open at the bottom
only...
too. But to Terry's point, when they were on the Ops set,
yes,
and someone got on that lift and it started to go down, it didn't go really to another set. That's on another stage,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, so they just
I know
go
that.
Down to right. nothing, so
cut into the next. Now we're going inside the turbo lift. Yeah,
yeah,
But you know what I'm saying, Robbie? It has no walls, and then all of a sudden, it's completely enclosed. Is what it is.
I don't think it's enclosed. I think when
I'm gonna
in
pay
this
better
scene,
attention.
Kira and Cisco go down open.
Yeah,
they leave Ops, and when we see them on the promenade, it's finishing coming down, and they're still open. I think it's open on both.
Okay, so Ops is directly above the promenade, then is what it is, and it just goes right into the promenade. And it's still open right there. Okay,
it must.
So it's really not a turbo lift.
Did you ever think of that, Terry?
No, I didn't put that much thought into it. I remember, I thought that the ring was the promenade. That it just we see this one part with corks, but that it literally goes all the way around.
Right.
Oh yeah, it could. It does.
The second you see the windows, I thought Ops was in the center.
I think that
elevator seems to go straight down in our story
into the promenade. So then it would go straight. Oh gosh.
Oh, my brain hurts.
The only set of the promenade you had was the one with corks over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it wrapped around.
It implied that there was more.
Yes. Okay. It implied that it was. Thank you. Ooh,
I think it's mislabeled. It shouldn't be called a turbo lift then. A turbo lift moves at a fast speed. That's just a regular lift.
That's
just
a lift
only.
Let's move on to the promenade. Kira and Cisco get down. They're arguing. The argument escalates. Cisco even grabs her arm at one point. It gets really heated very quickly. He grabs her. He says he will not tolerate terrorists on this station. And Kira, instead of going, yes, sir, she kind of tops him. She says, I always have wanted a strong Bajoran society, and integrating splinter groups like this, even terrorists, may be necessary. Mm-hmm. So she goes toe to toe with him. Yeah. I thought that was really a great scene. I love that scene.
Okay.
Being able to open up to Kira right away, first mm-hmm. of all, bravo to Nana Visitor. Excellent episode for her all the way yeah. around. Mm-hmm. But I love watching her negotiate this new way of being for herself mm-hmm. because you think of her being in Khon Ma. So mm-hmm. that's pretty heavy duty. That's yeah. like, what?
Yeah.
I can't even imagine having that headset to be a terrorist and then to come and turn your life around to be a part yeah. of the integration. Okay. I mean, yeah. that's, yeah, part of the solution. So that this is a very big episode watching her live out this experience and find a new way of accepting where she's at and how she yeah. can protect the Bajoran people. And I love that she stood up to him.
Yeah, yeah, I did too. I thought it was great. Yeah. And I will say, like, this is the right episode to have after the pilot because it's we need to know what the politics of this place are. It's mm-hmm. exactly the right kind of episode for the series. And like you said, a great episode for Nana. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kira goes into the infirmary next and Bashir is treating Tana. He's got very bad wounds from multiple recent battles, and Kira reassures him that she is still fighting for Bajor in her own way. And Sisko arrives. He asks her to leave and decides to conduct this interview alone. He can see that Kira is biased, I guess, to say the least.
To say the least. Not only that, but she also seemed like maybe she had some kind of a thing with him, the way she
yes.
it was very intimate, yeah. how she leaned in with him and all of that. It felt mm-hmm. like they had a romantic.
Yeah. Yes,
maybe,
it did.
Mm-hmm. Something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sisko
and why
does
not?
This.
I mean, he's a great looking guy.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Nordling is super handsome.
Super handsome.
He was
man.
So handsome, yeah. I didn't recognize him immediately. yeah. So, Tana tells Sisko that he has been commuted for all of his crimes and he was punished for crimes committed against Cardassians, you know, over half a century ago. But he's had enough of killing. He basically declares his innocence here. Hmm. And as Sisko leaves, Tana's head sort of turns towards the camera and he looked evil. And I was like, I don't believe anything you just said, but Sisko bought it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
What is up with the bumps that were on his forehead and then they disappear at the end of the scene? Is that a Bajoran extra nostril? Is he breathing through that? What's going on? I did not know what was happening.
They seemed to change.
They were prominent and then they went flat. It was like one of those bladders when you were in your lizard costume, Robbie. It was like yes. a bladder in there, you know, or something.
Used to be a piece. There was the nose, and, yeah. and there was a little piece that little like flange,
like a T up here.
And then
the
they took that off.
Yes,
because
but they took
terrible.
That off of. But they didn't take it off of him. He still had it. Is what I'm saying. You know,
all the Bajorans seem a little different. Like when I look at
it'll
the background Bajoran. Yeah,
Their way with makeup, just like we are with the storytelling.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, what was that flange supposed to be? I don't even understand the purpose of
breathing.
That's why it's not there.
I have to ask, when he's shirtless, Jeff Nordling is shirtless, hairy chest, and Bashir is talking about all these horrible scars, and it looked like pink spray paint on his chest.
Yeah.
I was like, that's horrible torture.
No, they should have shaved the chest and then added scars, but it looks so much better when a man just has his chest hair.
Oh, he looked great. It just didn't work with the pink spray paint.
No, it didn't work.
We go to Kira's quarters next. There's Kira talking to Admiral Rollman, and she's basically tattletaling. She's telling the Admiral that Sisko doesn't understand the issues. He's not handling this right. And the Admiral thanks Kira. So it seems like Kira's kind of started to stir up some trouble for Sisko.
Yeah, that's a poor choice to go around your, you know, superior officer to try
above.
Above, yeah. Above.
Around, here. Underneath, above.
I mean, to Susan Nimoy, no doubt.
Yes, yes.
Ah.
That makes it worse, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next scene is in ops. Sisko comes in and O'Brien tells him that the Cardassians have docked But Dax is delaying them. So she's the brains of the operation up there. She's taking care of the TSA, full TSA on the Cardassians. Mm-hmm. And he also tells Sisko that you wouldn't want to turn anybody over to the Cardassians. Very ominous kind of, you know, you may not know the Cardassians and what they do, but take it from me. You don't, even my worst enemy, I wouldn't turn over to them. Mm. And then he gets a call from Admiral Roman. So he heads to his office. But that's important that Miles O'Brien shares this. You wouldn't want to turn anybody over. That's going to come back to be part of his strategy later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we learn a little bit about Cardassians, you know, I mean, for us, Robbie and I, we're like, oh, they're vicious and they're, you know, they do all kinds of really hardcore things that you don't want to have done to you. So now we know.
Because it's only the third episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sisko goes into his office. The Admiral basically tells Sisko she's kind of upset that Kira rudely interrupted a staff meeting to complain about him. Mm-hmm. And the Admiral basically says, I think you've got a problem, Commander, with this Kira lady. This Bajoran troublemaker. So Sisko just sits on that. He's got the information. He sits on it. We go to the infirmary next. Kira's there. She comes in and kind of startles Tana awake. He must have PTSD from being a terrorist for so long because he jumps up very scared. And he does say something. He wonders if she's lost her old fire working with Starfleet. So he's fishing a little bit here.
Yeah.
He asks if she's going to let Sisko turn him over to the Cardassians. Do you think your commander's going to do this? And she says, nope, over my dead body, and leave. So that's some reassurance for him that she's still on team terrorist, he thinks.
Team Tannen.
Yes.
Team Tana. Yeah.
Tana.
Team Tana.
Yeah. The one thing I noticed in this, when he asks about Sisko, he says to Kira, you know, what about your commander? You and Sisko, do you get along? And she says, like oil and water, which I thought was an interesting, you know, admission from her that she's telling him that she does not like Sisko yet. Mm-hmm. Does that continue, Terry? Like, is that kind of combative with Sisko and Kira? Is that kind of a running theme?
You have to stay tuned.
Good answer.
Tell me, I have so many questions from this episode.
We can talk about this episode, but I think we'll shoot ourselves in the foot if we start jumping ahead.
That's
because most people already have seen the whole series, right?
I'm dying to know, though. I'm dying to know so many things.
Then good. You'll
say Andy Robinson, is he really a spy? Is he a good guy or bad guy? I can't tell right now.
I don't know, but let's save that.
Let's save that. Okay.
Let's keep going.
We go to the commander's office. Goldenar is there talking to Sisko. He's very angry about all these unnecessary docking delays. Thank you, Dax. He wants this prisoner turned over immediately. And Sisko basically says, nope. For now, he's going to grant him asylum. I love this scene. Again, Rick Colby directing. I love his low angles. The way he stages scenes is so elegant and beautiful, especially when Sisko gets up from the desk and he's basically kicking Goldenar out. And it's this long shot that sort of tracks him around slowly as he's being, you know, super cool and elegant as he walks to the door and hits the door button. Cool as a cucumber. I thought it was great.
I think what makes this scene go is Vaughn Armstrong's performance. I think absolutely dead on. He knocked this out of the park. I think this guest star role was better than the guest star roles he did on Voyager. I'm going to say right now, he really, really did so well in this. I was so impressed. Yeah. I love Vaughn.
Yeah, that's great. How many episodes did Vaughn do of your show? Do you know? I mean, you don't have to know the exact number.
But I have no idea.
It was a lot, probably, right?
I have no idea. I really don't.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see.
I mean, think about it. 30 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm where you guys were at watching episode 3 of your show. I'm like, I don't remember. I didn't even remember that was
you sound like Robbie. Robbie's like, I don't remember that. So
well, it's funny. Like, we had an actress, Martha Hackett, who played Sisko in our show. Mm-hmm. And if you had asked me before this podcast,
love her.
How many episodes, Martha's great.
Yeah.
If you had said to me, how many episodes did Martha do of Voyager? I would have said, 20, 30, maybe. She did like 6 or 7. I can't remember. But I was shocked.
Yeah. I was shocked seeing Andy in this episode because I thought I didn't remember him being there right at the beginning. But of course he was because I said hi to him. But I mean, I don't know. You just don't think about it after time goes by, right?
Yeah. And we were all shocked seeing JG on the pilot too, right?
Right. As a
Vulcan
was so great.
Is so bizarre to see him as a Vulcan. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Super weird. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know about Susan either. I was like, that was kind of wild. Yeah. I didn't know who Susan was when we were
back then. You didn't
filming it. No. Yeah.
All right. So Von Armstrong gets kicked out of Cisco's office and we go to Tana's quarters. Kira opens a door showing Tana his new quarters. He loves his civilized quarters, but he doesn't like the Federation being here. And they talk about how much he wants Bajoran independence, doesn't want this interference from the Federation or anybody else. Kira does bring up, she says, you know, now that the wormhole's been discovered, things are a little different. Commerce, opportunities for us, you know. Mm-hmm. But she does promise him that she's going to work on his behalf. If he's truly done with the Conmo, if he's done being a terrorist, then she will help him. And he assures her that he is done with that. And he even offers, he says, maybe I can get a couple more Conmo to join me to come to your side, Kira. So he's offering up some more ammunition, I guess, or more temptations for her to trust him. Mm-hmm. And this is the scene where I realized it was Jeff Nordling, by the way. I was like, I had to stop and go, oh my God, that's Jeff Nordling. I finally recognize him. He didn't have pink paint.
He had his clothes on.
Yeah, I don't know him with his clothes off. So, this was a great scene. Another creepy look at the end, by the way. He's so
passionate. Is he the king of creepy looks? He is in this episode.
I think Rick Colby did a lot of like tag looks in lots of scenes.
Oh my God. That's the way he did in Voyager as well. So
yeah, lots of like turn back to the camera for a nice, close up.
Yeah.
Don't tell too much, but just give us a little.
There was always a little extra at the end of most of these scenes. Mm-hmm. We go to the promenade next. There's two Klingon females there being detained by a deputy. They've refused to surrender their weapons, and Odo comes and gives them a choice to surrender the weapons or leave the station, and they reluctantly comply. I will say at the top of the scene, the guards are holding the Klingon women with their weapons. And the guards have weapons. And I was like, finally, somebody's got a weapon on this ship. Because that really confused me that there were no weapons. I'm so used to seeing phasers and, you know.
Well, but like we said in the pilot, in that altercation that happened on the promenade, Cisco did have his phaser and he shot to the side of the criminals. Obviously didn't shoot someone.
Right.
Yeah.
But in this case, then I would say to you, we're going back to, you went through the Federation TSA. How did you get on the promenade with your Klingon weapons? On those actresses were excellent, by the way. That is like one of those scenes where you're like, it's a tiny little bite of something. Yeah. And they were like a meal. That was a meal. They were completely in it.
Yeah. These characters have been used in the feature films as well. So really? I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know if
those two actresses.
Yes. They were in one of the, they're super popular because they did such a good job on one of the Star Trek feature films. I'm wondering if this episode took place after their feature film appearance or this was their intro to Trek. And then they were used later for feature. Yeah. I'm not sure. But they are.
Yeah. But it was super, excellent.
Yeah. People love those two. So the sisters, the Duras sisters.
I can see why.
Yeah.
I love them. They're amazing.
Yeah, they're good.
I had another question. So I love your question. How did they get through the TSA with the rifles, the Klingon rifles? And it seems like somebody would have stopped in there.
And they look scary. It's not like, oh, mom's coming through with a machine gun. It's like, whoa.
No, it's Klingons.
The
other thing is like, why is there a crowd 5 feet away from this armed standoff?
No one's ducking for cover.
Deputies with weapons drawn. They're all like, they're really close. It's like, this Odo has to come through the crowd who's like 2 feet away from this armed standoff.
Oh my God, that's so true. Like,
maybe we should all,
go for cover.
But how about some of you guys go break for lunch?
Exactly.
But my word.
Odo does take the weapons from them and welcomes them to DS9, which I thought was very cute. Mm-hmm. We go to the commander's office and then Odo shows up and he tells Sisko that these two Klingon sisters have arrived and he checked on the database. They are listed as Klingon renegades. Mm-hmm. So they're not, they're runaways. They're wanted. you know, these two.
They're bad girls.
Yes.
Well, they try to start a revolution, right? They try to grab control of the Klingon High Council. Yeah, the Klingon High Council. This is a huge deal. This isn't
started
just
a
like...
small civil war.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what these two do.
Oh, they my did gosh. That.
And then they just waltzed right into DS9 with their weapons drawn and nobody stopped them. Yeah.
They're not the Dara sisters to me. They're the Chaos sisters to me. Yeah,
exactly. So that's a little bit of a,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like security should beef up their, laws and rules don't mean anything if you don't enforce them.
Agreed. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mm-hmm. Well, Odo is not happy about these two women that have showed up. He wants to lock them up. He wants to call the Klingons, turn them over. And Sisko says, no. And I love he says at the end, he says, you know, under Cardassian rule, things may have been oppressive, but at least it was simple. It's like Odo longs for some of the Cardassian tough on crime or whatever, I guess.
It made me think of the Wild West. Like Odo was the sheriff and his rules were way more important than the actual laws.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're at Quark's and the Klingon sisters are sitting upstairs and Bashir approaches Garak. Garak says, you know, as a clothier, he's likes to watch what people are wearing around the promenade. And he's very interested in the Klingon sisters' clothes, he says. And then he notices Tana arrive and the sisters jump up to join him. And Odo, who's come into this is Quark's. So they're all kind of mingling. Odo's come in and sees Tana and the sisters, meeting up in that scene. So everybody's suspicious of, we're starting to see that Tana knows these Klingon sisters, and that's probably why they're here. They've got something going on. I love this wide shot over the sisters from the balcony. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm just so impressed with the background performers, the size and scale of your show. It's huge. The set was huge.
A lot of places to shoot from, which is awesome. Oh, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was
beautiful.
Not without its challenges. I'm sure if we had Rick on, you know, or even Jonathan.
Jonathan West.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. I was like, Frakes came to my mind and I'm like, no, that's not who you're thinking of. I like though that you could see that they were far enough away that, the Klingons and, Tana Los. Mm-hmm. Oh my word. Can you imagine trying to shoot me with a 3-page monologue? And anyway, I like that it felt like we were sort of spying on them. They didn't see us seeing them. Right. So that was important too, I thought, that it added to this sort of conspiracy that's happening, this thing that's evolving.
Yeah, the multiple levels of that set are such a great part of creating this community, this village that of people, you know, there's lots of places to hide and be private or look down on someone else. I can imagine that set is going to be the perfect environment for stories coming up because it was great for this scene.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful set.
Yeah. So they connect and we cut into a cargo bay or a storage area and the doors open. The Klingon women come in, Tana's with them. They're going to someplace private. And as they come through the door and walk off camera, this rat runs by the foreground. And I was like, ew, it was creepy. Rats. You had rats on your space station? Oh, you can't. No, it turns out to be Odo. So it's
yes.
But still, if he's going to take on.
Did he stop watching that?
I know, he's at the end.
No, but I'm saying.
Yes, we have Cardassian rats. We do. There's an episode coming up where
there are rats.
I'm part of the crew trying to get rid of the rats. I can't remember what they're called.
Okay. So
can you call them Cardassa rats? Cardassa rats. That's
that was that. But that was my point is like when I first saw a rat, I was like, ooh. And then my next thought was, wait, they're out in space. They wouldn't have any rats out here.
But there are.
But they
now
do
we know.
Have Cardassian. Okay. So he was taking the cover of a Cardassian rat. Got it.
Got it.
Okay. Anyway, the rat runs across. the Klingon sisters meet Tana in the corner. They want their gold from him. He says it's on its way, that they're going to have it tomorrow. They kind of threaten him and say, you know, you better have it. And then they leave. Mm-hmm. And then the rat that we thought was just background at the top of the scene turns into Odo. Yeah. And it was a great shot because it started on the rat down on the ground. It started to kind of morph. And then it tilted up through some foreground or something. And the morph continued up to turn into Odo. It was really well done, really elegant. I thought it was great.
I thought it was too.
It was cool. Robbie and Terry, here is my question. If Odo can shapeshift into a rat, an identical version of a Cardassian rat, why, when we see him walking around, can't he make his face look perfectly human or perfectly Cardassian or perfectly Bajoran? Why does he have that look of sort of like a, you know, hockey mask looking face? It makes no sense to me. It's like, why do you look like you have a weird face, right?
How does he say it's hard to look human and then he can look
exactly like anything else he wants? Exactly.
Like a rat.
Or a chair or whatever he does. You know, I mean, he changes into anything identically, but yet in his normal, you know,
why couldn't we have this Rene Auberjonois with his own face?
Hi. Yeah, where he wouldn't have to go through makeup.
And maybe if he got tired, it started to look like that. That would be one thing.
Oh, yes. Like he was running out of energy. He has to regenerate. Yes. That it starts to kind of look like,
he's got to go in the mask
look.
We just improved on the show. We just improved on the show.
We just made the show better. Let's reshoot it.
If Rene were alive, he would love this idea. If he were alive, he would be like, oh my gosh, get this shit off my face.
We could AI him right now. So, here you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, great scene. So we see that Odo has heard all of this.
And it was a great use of the budget to spend it on that particular moment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. I think so, yeah.
We go up to Ops. Sisko comes into Ops, and Kira is just super energetic here. She's getting the Minister's Council on board for amnesty for Tana. And she even says that Tana told her that two more Konma terrorists are coming to join him if Sisko promises to keep them safe. And Sisko agrees. Mm-hmm. She thanks Sisko. A really, really sweet moment here where she's like, you know, I really want to thank you for helping me. And I couldn't have done any of this without you. And so you feel this oil and water sort of melting a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then he says, well, remember that the next time that you talk to the Admiral. If you go over my head again, it will not be pretty, basically. So
it will be on a platter.
Her head will be on a platter.
That could be pretty. I don't know.
Yes.
Right. Well, the Na's pretty, but I think she'd like to keep her head on her shoulders.
Yes.
Great turns, really great energy in the scene. It was just, I was, you know, moment to moment was so authentic and great. Mm. I love the staging with Rick Colby had Sisko kind of moving through the ops section, and they ended up on some stairs. So it went from this sort of equal height to all of a sudden Avery is standing 2-3 feet above her looking down when he threatens her. And I loved the little subtle, you know, status of high and low and using those angles. Bravo, Rick. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bravo to Rick and all the directors that like really, and he's one of them. It's a visual medium.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're using the words, and all of us are using the words at the base, but the actors are doing underlines. You're doing what you're feeling, right? Mm-hmm. What's in between the lines. And Rick Colby's doing a great job of visually helping us tell the story too. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons I really like this episode too. There's so many layers of authentic reality of what Odo and Sisko and Kira are all going through, our heroes are going through in trying to balance the Federation and the Bajoran conflict that's happening.
Yeah, Rick had such a light touch as a director, my memory. I always felt like he had a very light touch in terms of pushing you as an actor one way or the other. But he knew how to get you into the right kind of staging or the right position or the right emotional levels that would just amplify the story's subtext and message. So he was so good. I loved him.
He has a very zen thing about him, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until he lost his cool, and then that temper came out now and then.
Yeah.
But usually
you didn't want to upset him, but most of the time.
No.
Yeah.
We go to the commander's office. Sisko comes in. Odo is there waiting for him. Odo tells him that Tana and the sisters have some kind of secret business arrangement. And Sisko thinks that maybe the other two Bajorans that Kira just mentioned might be bringing, you know, bringing the gold that, that Odo overheard. Mm-hmm. Sisko doesn't want Kira to know yet, though. So he just takes this information, listens to it. The one thing I noticed in this scene was the close talking.
Me it's, too.
Did you notice
like,
that?
What? They were like this.
Nose to nose.
What was that? That was so uncomfortable.
Garrett and I've talked about this on our show a lot.
It happens on Voyager a lot.
That they
too.
Would force us to get so close, unnaturally close to each other to try to hold that shot. And you were always like, really?
This always doesn't for the look camera. Weird. It's always for the camera. And it
especially
just...
those two. I would never think those two would, that energy. It's it's like toxic masculinity having the two of them be an inch away from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
The close talking was the only thing in the scene that bumped me. Otherwise, I thought it was great. I like the lack of coverage. There was very little coverage. It played in kind of one long staging. Again, Rick Colby was so good at that, you know, creating kind of movement and not jumping into close-ups right away. I thought it was great. But Sisko doesn't want to tell Kira about what they know. We go to Garrick's shop next. The Klingon sisters have arrived. Garrick offers to make some silk lingerie for them or something. They get very offended. They get very offended about that. But he offers to make them some clothes, and they don't want clothes. They want to make a deal to turn over Tana. So they ask what Tana is worth, and Garrick writes out a number on his pad. He shows them the number. They're very insulted. They start to leave, and he says, wait a minute, maybe... we can negotiate. There's always room to negotiate. This is where I was like, is Garrick a good guy or a bad guy? I can't tell whose side he's on. And maybe that's the running theme here for his character. But
good scene, though. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that we are questioning him. There's a lot of things we're questioning about Garrick in my mind, though.
Mm. A lot of things. I don't know if he's on the Cardassian side. I don't know if he really likes Bashir, if he's trying to use him in some way.
There's nothing about him seems genuine to me.
No, no.
Except for that he makes clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like the moment from Andy Robinson when the Cardassian women are insulted about the lingerie and they go to like grab him or something. And it felt like Andy's reaction, the way he jumped, felt real. It felt
the Klingon
very
women.
Authentic. Yes, from the Klingon women. Yeah.
You called them Cardassians. It's okay.
Oh,
the Alpha Quadrant species aren't big in
the Delta Quadrant. Yeah. But I did marry a Klingon, so
half
I
Klingon.
Should,
you should know that, man.
Really Klingon?
Yeah,
I did not know that about
Bilana
her.
Yeah, Torres
loved Roxanne.
So I know about Klingons. I get why Andy Robinson jumped. Okay.
Yeah, I was smart of him, actually. Mm-hmm.
He offers a price, offers to negotiate. He even says at the very end of the scene, I am no more than what I seem to be, a merchant trying to make the best transaction. And I wrote down, oh no, he's a lot more than that. He's claiming to be a simple guy, but I think he's much more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Tana's quarters next. Kira arrives, tells Tana that he is going to get amnesty. He's very surprised and admits that he didn't expect that she could do it before he came. And this is where she's starting to realize that he lied and that he's had another plan this whole time. And he admits, yes, I did have another plan, but it's a nonviolent plan, he promises. And it'll get everything that Bajor ever wanted. He just needs her help. He needs a ship capable of warp speed. And she asks, well, what is the plan? And he says, I'm not going to tell you that. You have to decide whether you're loyal to Bajor, or we'll know where your loyalties are depending on what you decide. So she's put in a tough position here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, he doesn't believe in compromise in this situation. He's not feeling safe until she makes a decision.
Yeah.
To live her old life, basically.
This is a really tough episode for her because, she's also... she trusted him and assumed that he was sort of making the same choices she was making, which is to work together with the Federation.
But her assumptions were not crazy. He led her to believe this too.
Yeah.
Right.
We go back to the replomat. Garrick joins Bashir at a table. Garrick says, you know, there's a real concern that two Khanma terrorists are talking with Tana, and he wants to know why. He says together, maybe they can find out. He tells Bashir to come buy a new suit in his shop at precisely 20:55 hours. Precisely. So that's basically Garrick. Garrick is now, again, I was confused. I'm like, wait, I thought he was kind of helping the Cardassians with those Klingons. He was going to make a deal, but now it doesn't seem that way. I don't know what he's doing. I did like in the scene how when he first arrives, Bashir says, ah, plain, simple Garrick, how are you today? It's like the running line. He just wants to be known. Everybody to know him as plain, simple Garrick. He's kind of protesting a little too much, I think. But that's my thoughts on that. I'm really confused, even more confused about Garrick.
Yeah.
We go to ops. Next, Kira is looking at the Khanma files. She's very worried. Sisko appears and he says he wants to meet the new Khanma that arrived and asks Kira if she trusts these new arrivals as much as she trusts Tana. And she says, absolutely. And then she leaves. But you can tell, and he can tell, because there's a look when she leaves and she's getting on that lift. There's a lingering look between them. And you know that she said she trusts them, but Sisko knows that that's not true.
And how could she? She hasn't met them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, she hasn't met them. She doesn't know. And she's even kind of questioning, why do I have a hard time with his name?
Tana. Yeah.
Tana
Los. It's kind of like Balana. Okay, so after this lingering look between Sisko and Kira, where he knows that she's starting to have her doubts too, Bashir arrives and tells Sisko that Garrick insists that he buy a new suit at precisely 20:55. And has something to do with the Khanma that have arrived. And Bashir doesn't know what to do. Should I buy a suit? Should I not buy a suit? And Sisko basically says, you know what? I think you could use a new suit. So
I love that moment.
Yeah. And Sisko says, go buy the suit because he thinks maybe this is, you know, some way of communicating without direct communication, that maybe these people are a common enemy of ours. That's why Garrick is saying, you know, is seeming kind of shady here in his dealings, because they have a common enemy. Sisko can see through all of the smoke and mirrors. Maybe we have a common enemy, and maybe this is their way of communicating that and go buy a new suit. We go to the security office next. Kira comes to find Odo, asks if everything is ready for the minister's court arrival. She's being kind of coy. And he picks it up on that. He knows that she's got something else she's concerned about. She admits, she says to him, do you know everything about me? And he says, more than you think, probably more than you think. She admits that she did some bad things in her past, but at least she always knew who the bad guys were. Mm-hmm. And now she's basically struggling with the decision. She's in a pickle here because she's going to have to betray someone, either her old friends or Starfleet and Sisko. And I love his advice. He says, the important thing is not to betray yourself.
Yeah. I like that line.
That really,
I actually wrote that down. Odo, the only important thing is not to betray yourself, which is a great, great lesson.
Yeah.
100%. Mm-hmm. My heart kind of broke for her with compassion in this scene, knowing what it's like when you're in a turning point in your life, when you have to let go of what doesn't work anymore and let go of people that don't work anymore in your life. And that can be a hard thing, even though you know it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was a very relatable situation that Kira was in.
Yes, 100%.
I like that. I like when Star Trek does that, kind of can get to the heart of something that we all have experienced on some level and put it into these sci-fi stories.
Before you go on, Robbie, there's one thing I've noticed in the Starfleet uniforms, and I'm sure you've seen this too, Robbie. In the opening, the V part, all the DS9 players, it's flared out. It's ironed out. And on Voyager, ours are pressed down. So
yeah, I've noticed.
Do you understand
that
what I'm saying, Terry? Like the V, you know, the V of your Starfleet uniform, right?
Like right so in here.
Right here, the V. It's turned out and ironed to stick out, which we did not do on Voyager. It was pushed down. You'll notice now that we brought it up. Okay. It's probably so commonplace for you that you don't see the difference, but it's clearly the fabric is turned and ironed and spray starched so it sticks straight out forward. It's really weird.
You mean the colored part?
Yeah, yeah. It's the, right. It's like I right here on my on my sweatshirt,
the opening of your of your neck,
as opposed to being ours was like, tight down like that. Yours kind of flared out a little bit.
It flares out.
Right on. Okay, I'll pay attention.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
I think. Is it different in is Avery wearing a different uniform than us, or is that
no?
Mm-mm. This was my least favorite of our uniforms. Was this one?
But later, I think later DS9, the Starfleet uniforms now they end up looking more Voyager-y. They're
we
not
change uniforms.
Down. Yeah,
completely.
You do change the uniform.
They go
then you change
being,
again, and you go gray. You go gray at some point, right? So that changes again. Where there's
well,
some
those
gray
might
action.
Be like dress outfits.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
Right. Because we have dress uniforms where the color is in a different spot.
Yep. And my other note that I have, my other note for both of you is that when looking at monitors, anybody looking at a monitor, all the text, Robbie, do you notice? It's the old late DOS. 80s, early 90s Apple SE print text.
Oh, I called it DOS. I thought it was DOS.
No,
I actually have a video
DOS.
Reaction about it. It looks like old, like Microsoft, like DOS.
That's so funny. I see old Apple, original Apple computers. And but if you look at the print of it, to me, it is exactly because I had an Apple II SE in 1987, 88. So I know that print exactly. And that's duplicated.
Funny.
So I feel like they use Apple computers.
It's definitely
for
old
visual
school.
Effects. Yeah. Old school.
Okay, I'm just going to say to all of you out there watching us, these are the two cutest nerdy guys ever.
Thanks, Terry.
You're welcome. I don't know what it reminded me of.
Okay.
It just looks vintage. It looks like old sci-fi. It feels older than your show. Your show was 93.
Point. Yeah, it looks older than the
show. But
the
tech
show.
Felt like 80s to
it
me,
did.
For sure.
It's
for
80s
sure.
Tech.
Okay, now we go to Garrick's shop. Bashir arrives at 2055 or whatever the time was.
Actually, he's late. He arrives at 2057. He's
that's
late.
Right. He's a little bit late. Garrick hides him in a changing room, hands him he says, here, try this suit on. Try it on as many times as you want. But all he hands him is a jacket. He doesn't give him pants. Pants. I was like, and then Bashir looks in the mirror and he looks at the jacket and he makes this sour face, which again makes me laugh. Team Bashir all the
Team
way.
So
I thought
cute.
It was funny. But he hears the Klingon women come in. We cut outside to this conversation. The Klingon women admit that Tana, they're going to sell Tana Belitrium, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. Belitrium, this chemical that will make the bomb. Mm-hmm. And they say if the Cardassians want him, they can capture him at the rendezvous point. They tell him where that's going to be. They leave. Bashir comes out, asks, what is Belitrium? Garrick says it's a rare crystal used with an antimatter converter. It's a huge bomb. And he's got an antimatter converter. So that is why the Cardassians were chasing him. Again, any scene with Bashir in it at this point, I'm all in. I love him. He's great. Makes me laugh.
I love him too.
I know. He's so charming.
I know. Yeah.
He makes us smile. He's entertaining.
He's entertaining.
Yes.
He's handsome. He's talented.
Yes.
And he's a kind person. He really is. Really a gem of a human being.
Yeah.
He's got a British accent.
Yeah. Okay, that's just like, that is the cherry on the sundae, right?
Right?
Like, he'd be amazing
for
anyway.
Americans, it is, yes. Americans are enamored. They're in love with all things English.
Are you not American?
I am American. I am American. I'm just saying.
But you have, like, Americans.
General.
Like,
Americans.
We're like, yeah.
It's because we came from, you know,
we're a
English
mashup
roots.
Of all the things.
Yeah,
we're American.
Yeah. Okay, we go to ops. The team is now gathered. It feels like to me we're at the point in our classic Star Trek story where there's going to be some action. The plan's going to have to come together. So the team is gathered. They don't know what the best option is. Kira says she should go, keep her plans with Tana so he's not suspicious and they can find out the whole scheme. That's the only way to truly stop them. Sisko agrees. And he and O'Brien decide that they're going to hide undetected behind this moon at the rendezvous point as backup. And Kira's going to go. So that's their plan. Kira's going to risk it. She's choosing Team Federation here. But she's got to go undercover one last time to see what the whole plan is. There was a cool shot pushing into Kira at one point when she's kind of making this decision to risk herself. I thought, again, Rick Colby, I love him. He's one of my favorite Trek directors we ever had. Great stuff. Okay, next we go to the security office, and Odo's watching on monitors as Sisko and O'Brien are about to depart. Up at Ops, Dax is scanning from Ops to see what's going on. Sisko says they get in position, the runabout Ganges with Sisko and O'Brien, they get in position and he says, shut down all main power systems. And O'Brien says, dead quiet. So they're sitting in their backup position behind the moon, hiding behind the moon.
It's so cool that all the runabouts are named after rivers on Earth, right? Yeah. So the Ganges, most Chinese don't even call it the Yangtze is how you would say it. We don't even say that. They say Changjiang. Jiang is river in Chinese. Chang is long. They just call that river the Long River because it's the longest river, right?
Oh, wow.
But if you want to say K-I-A-N-G on Deep Space Nine is river, but it's not pronounced Qiang, it's Jiang. So it's a J sound. So the way you would say it, soft A, not Yang, but Yang. So Yangtze. Jiang is how you say that shuttle. Yangzijiang.
Wait, how do we say it again?
Yangzijiang. Yangzijiang. So shuttle Yangzijiang is how you say it.
Wait, you're saying it so fast I can't even get saying it right.
Yang. Yang.
Yang.
Yeah, so you're both Yang.
Yangzi.
Jiang. Jiang is straight across. The tone is one. Tone number one. So it's Yangzijiang. Yangzijiang. So it kind of, your voice goes down and up high. Yangzijiang is how you say it. And I would not be a good Chinese American if I did not stop and explain to everyone that that is the correct way to pronounce it. So.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood.
And we're on your side. And I can't go back and do it. I'm so sorry.
It's funny because when I'm watching this episode earlier, we always have our captions on just because sometimes you can read alien names better, right? So someone said Yahtzee, someone said Yangtze Qiang. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I just spoiled my own joke. So someone said Yangtze Qiang, and then on it shows the caption, and Megan's in the kitchen and she's not directly in front of the TV. So from an angle, she goes, Yahtzee King is what she said. Like the king of Yahtzee.
That's funny.
I started laughing so hard. I go, no, honey, they're mispronouncing the river in China and they're saying Yangtze Qiang, you know, and you're saying Yahtzee King, which is completely off. You know, they wouldn't know it.
Well, it's funny. I wonder, like on some of the newer Trek shows, like on Discovery or Strange New Worlds or something, if they were to write a runabout Yangtze Qiang, Yangtze Qiang. If they were to write that into an episode, I wonder if they would have any kind of cultural advisors that they would make sure, like, I think nowadays,
right,
what you're pointing out, people have an awareness that,
They'll go to a native speaker and say, hey, how do you pronounce this?
How do you pronounce
it? And they'll have
it?
The actors pronounce it the
but
right way.
But we didn't back then.
Yeah.
No, but we should have because we were Star Trek. It just seems like we should have been more elevated in our awareness to say things.
Exactly. That's why I was shocked. I was like, wait a minute. There's no way that being Trek, some of these writers and some of these other people didn't say, hey, let's call someone up who's Chinese and say,
but
hey,
Garrett, you know, with Chakotay, our indigenous character on our show,
we had a fake advisor,
and they didn't even care that much. Like,
no,
so I think
maybe that's what happened.
I think
too.
Our generation, DS9 and Voyager, we were in this sort of middle ground of there was an awareness that we should be doing culturally conscious things, but they weren't doing it 100%. They were just sort of, you know, naming a runabout after a Chinese river. And they thought that's enough.
Yeah,
we don't even have to say it right.
We don't have to.
There's a little nod to the Chinese.
There's a nod, but we're not really going to.
But we don't complete
through.
That by pronouncing it correctly.
Pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
all right.
Terrible.
Thank you for allowing me to explain.
Thank
this.
You
Absolutely.
For, yeah. Thank you for educating us too.
So just so you know, Yangzijiang, Yangzijiang. So the Z that it's written as Yangtze. It's not an E. It's Yangz. It's almost like a you stop right. You go T Z and then end. Yangzijiang, Yangzijiang. Don't go E. Just go Yangzijiang. Yeah. Young Zhejiang is how you would say it. So
Garrett, you know, I can't speak any other
you languages. Can.
I've tried. It's just I'm not smart enough to do it. But all I'll try.
Thank you.
I will try. But
as
I
long
feel...
as you don't go Yangtze Kiang, I'm happy. Just go okay. Young Zhejiang. Yeah. Thanks.
On the runabout with the Chinese river that I can't pronounce.
Thank you.
Yangtze-Chang.
Yeah.
That one. Kira is piloting this runabout. Tan is there plugging in the antimatter converter. And Kira asks, what is he doing? And he said, you'll know soon. And then a Klingon bird of prey appears on the O'Brien and Sisko runabout. Mm-hmm. How do you pronounce that one, Garrett?
Oh, that's not even Chinese. So I have no idea how the
I don't speak any foreign language, so right. I don't know.
So I'm sure it's pronounced differently
actually,
in Hindi.
I do. I've been to Rishikesh. Ganga.
Ganga. See,
Ganga.
Robbie.
Yeah. They Robbie. Pronounce it the Ganga.
Yeah.
So hey. On the runabout Ganga.
Can you tell Terry quickly why you were there in India? Just tell her.
I went with my daughter who was 17 for her senior graduation gift. There was a strike going on, a writer's strike at the time. So I wasn't working, and she was invited on this 3-week trip to India for yoga. And it was...
Oh, we had a little...
Yeah, it was an amazing
India,
trip.
Oh, India, though. How great.
Yeah. Terry's way into yoga, so I wanted him to explain that to you.
Right well, yeah.
Because I just did a 4-week teacher training in Sri Lanka last yes. summer.
There you go.
Or this summer, this past summer.
So, Robbie, say it again. Ganga?
I'm impressed.
Ganga.
Yeah, the Ganga River. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was in Rishikesh, which is on the Ganga River. Mm-hmm. Wow. Anyway, O'Brien and Sisko are in the yes. runabout Ganga, mm-hmm. and they see the Klingons have powered up transporters. We go back on the on Kira's runabout, and mm-hmm. the Klingon sisters beam in. I have to say, I love Klingon beam-ins. It's like this red glitter. Did you notice?
Why can't we have red glitter on Starfleet beam?
Red
beam
glitter.
It's
like, they're sparkly. They're sparkly.
It's very sparkly.
They're sparkly.
Yes. It's the only thing about them that sparkles, though.
Yeah, that's it.
They beam in with their gold, their red glitter sparkles, and they get their gold, and they hand him some kind of like
vial?
A tube. A vial, yeah, liquid. Yeah. Yeah, tube.
Well, they don't
liquid.
Hand it to it. They throw
they
it midair. Awesome. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's the did it say it's beryllium?
Blitrium, yeah.
Blitrium.
Yeah, not beryllium. That was in another franchise, but oh, okay.
Yes, so they beam out, and then we go back to Sisko and O'Brien. The bird of prey is moving off and cloaking, and Sisko says set an intercept course for the runabout. So they're going to head over and help Kira out. We go to ops, and Dax notifies Sisko the Cardassians are headed their way, about to intercept the both runabouts. So Cardassians are on their way. Klingons just left. Kira's all by herself. This is bad news. We go back to Sisko's shuttle, and he heads out to help Kira. But on Kira's shuttle, all of a sudden, alarms go off, alerting Tana, our bad guy, that there's another shuttle coming. He figures out it was waiting for them, and he tells Kira tells him that a Cardassian warship is close too. So Tana says, go to warp, set a course for DS9. She realizes that he's been lying about a lot of things, and she goes to get a phaser, but then he punches her, like full-on Matalone punch to the jaw. It was rough.
It was awkward because how does he know she's even going for that? Like, he doesn't even know the runabout technology and the specs of that place. You know what I'm saying? Those phasers were kind of tucked off to the side. It's like, how does he? She could have been just getting up to help do something, and he just punches her. I was a little.
He's perturbed. A bad guy.
Maybe. Yeah. Thank you. He's a bad guy.
Bad Tanalos.
Bad Tanalos. And he knows her though. So just like when you know anybody, if they're doing something. You might
he
not
knew
know.
That she, yeah, okay.
He
okay.
knew she'd taken a turn.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes
sense. He could sense
Thank
it.
You. Thank you.
Her so, hesitation, right?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He punches her. He grabs the phaser, holds it at her, and tells her to go to warp, or he's going to blow up the thing here and destroy 8 Bajoran colonies that are close by.
Mm-hmm.
God, he's a horrible. I thought he was all about the Bajorans, and now he's going to blow up 8 colonies.
He doesn't care.
And you know what? The chest hair is not making up for that now.
No, no. It did for a while, didn't it?
It did for a minute, yeah. But, you know, that's those like superficial things that you really shouldn't, you know, make important choices on.
Did you guys also notice when the Duras sisters first beam on the runabout, they're not even, one's facing forward, one's facing backwards. I was like, what? Why don't you guys? Okay, that was also kind of startling to me, too. One second, I don't know.
All right, weird. We go back to O'Brien. He says they've gone to warp. Sisko says follow them and calls for Kira, but Tana answers, and he tells them that there's armed Belitrium explosives on the ship and warns them, if you fire on us, that you will detonate that bomb. And back with Sisko, they realize that he's headed straight for DS9, straight for the station. And then Goldenar appears on Sisko's shuttle and basically says, I told you so. And Sisko ends this transmission.
Yeah, he doesn't go, yeah, you did.
Yeah, Sisko's like, I don't have time for the, you know, the blame game here.
Yeah, ends
the transmission.
He hangs up on him.
They're getting near DS9, so this is bad. This is Tana's plan. And then he reveals that he's actually not trying to blow up the station or anything. He's heading for the wormhole. He wants
to blow up the worm. Yeah.
Yes. If he can blow up the entrance to the wormhole, he'll collapse it and no more Starfleet or Cardassians or anybody else.
Yeah.
And Kira at the last minute makes a sharp turn as they get near the mouth of the wormhole, makes this sharp turn that sort of throws him off balance. And as they go through this wormhole and the shuttle's getting sucked through the wormhole, they've got this long, protracted fight. It was just crazy to me. It was both of them going at it. It was great. It was very exciting. And just as they go in the wormhole, Sisko and O'Brien are chasing them right on their heels. So they're following them. They go through the wormhole. They fight. They wrestle. They come out on the other side. And just as they come out the other side, the bomb is released and explodes harmlessly out in space.
Mm-hmm. Robbie, remember when O'Brien says, we may have to shoot them down, Commander, and Sisko says, ready photons, Chief. We never abbreviate photon torpedoes. We always say photon torpedoes, but in here in DS9, they just say ready photons, because photons could be a hologram, right? Remember photons be free, the doctor's program? So it was a little interesting to see how there's an abbreviation on DS9 here.
Which sounds like when you say things like that to make the comparison, it almost seems like your show is on before our show.
Yeah.
Like our show.
Because we spell it all out like that. Photon torpedoes. Da, 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 da. And then you guys are just like, hey, photons. Yeah. It does seem that way.
Interesting.
Good observation.
In timeline, are we all happening at the same time?
Should be, yeah.
We're close. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we know each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our show starts on DS9. Do you know that?
That's Sherry? Right.
Yeah. Our ship is docked.
No, that makes so much sense.
And then we leave DS9.
Because you guys were with Quark.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. My scene. Yeah. The intro scene that I had was with Quark and Robbie. So
it's interesting they didn't do more crossover, because if we're really happening when Next Gen was happening, and we're happening when you're happening. Hmm. Why didn't they do more crossover?
We couldn't do it between DS9 and Voyager because we were thrown to the other side of the galaxy. So there was no communication.
They could have gone to the Gamma Quad. Like, there could have been some attempt from the Alpha Quadrant to use DS9.
Even when we're in the mirrored universe. I mean, it doesn't have to be completely linear time.
Correct.
I don't know anything about this mirrored universe, by the way.
Right.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, you will find out.
You will.
I will.
You will.
And thank God Kira turned that shuttle, knocked Tana over.
It's catching.
Yes. Thank God she did that and didn't blow up the wormhole, because she saves the wormhole. Sisko shows up, asks if she's all right. Tana still has this phaser on her and said, no, she's not all right. If you want her alive, do as I say. He's still trying to threaten Sisko. And this is when Sisko says, he uses that information that he got from O'Brien way back when. He says, you can surrender to me now, or you can just wait for the Cardassian warship and I can let them deal with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you see his look. Tana gives up. He hands the phaser to Kira, surrenders. We cut to an airlock. Kira brings Tana out. Odo arrests him. And Kira's last line to him is, you know, the old ways don't work anymore. Everything is different now. So still early in your series, she's learning this lesson herself. She's kind of, mm-hmm. you know, speaking what she's realized for herself.
Yeah, really cementing home, like, who does she want to be? This episode made her have to really dig deep.
Yeah. I love the last shot as Sisko and Kira are walking away, like off into the sunset down the hallway. It was a great image to end on, because they had so much conflict during this episode. To see them walking, you know, shoulder to shoulder there together was great. So
yeah, they built trust.
Great episode.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I liked it too. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's your lesson from this episode, Robbie McNeil? What is your
lesson? My theme is kind of, I take it off that last line of Kira's, that if you want to build something new, you're going to have to try new ways. That's the lesson. Like, she was stuck in sort of this, her old thinking about Bajorans and about her old, you know, the people that she trusted and worked with and believed in. She had to let go of that and trust something new. So if you want to build something new, you got to trust trying something new. That would be my theme.
All right. My lesson is Odo's line in the series. The only important thing is not to betray yourself. I love that. I think that's the lesson for me from this episode.
It's a great line. Great lesson. Mm-hmm. Terry, do you have a lesson or a moral?
Yeah, I think it stems from Odo's line. And I think that would be, you know, the classic, to thine own self be true. But maybe even more importantly, if it costs you your integrity, it costs too much.
Mm. Mm. I like that angle. Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thanks, Terry Farrell, for joining us.
Thank you.
This week. And please, listeners out there, join us for next week's episode. Is A Man Alone? Very excited to watch that one.
With Terry joining us again.
Yeah, with Terry joining us for that one. A Man Alone. And for our patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. If you're not a patron on Patreon, check us out. There's lots of great, cool, extra stuff there if you become a patron. And everybody, we'll see you next week for A Man Alone.